Third and final hour here. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Paul Kaharski in for Robbie, broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, Air Conditioning, Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Also, Sunday, NFL Game of the Week, Bengals-Bills, noon on 102.5 The Game. NFL Game of the Week is presented by Circus Sportsbook Kentucky and Macero in 12 South. And 8 o'clock Thursday, as we do every time this week, we're happy to welcome in our friend Charles Robinson, covers the NFL for Yahoo Sports. Charles, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well, gents. I guess apparently better than Robbie. I hope he's okay.
Yeah, you know, I think he's going to be all right. Young kids, you know, you got the germs flying around. I mean, there's germs flying around for everybody, but I think that's in particular will increase the germage flying around. But we've got Paul Kaharski in here, which I know must be a joy for you to be able to talk to Paul.
Of course.
I mean, it's a joy for everybody who gets to talk to Paul. Okay, well, Charles, I want to start with this because we just had a listener call in on this. I know we've talked about him before with you, but I don't know if we've talked in a lot of depth about his last stop. There's a lot of interest here in Robert Saleh.
Mm-hmm.
Interest, and when I say interest, obviously I mean fan media interest.
Sure.
But, and look, he's it's gone well for him. People look at him and it's like, yep, that guy should be a head coach. Just like when he was
right
with the Niners last time. He's a great defense coordinator. He is a quote-unquote culture coach, all that stuff. I think you've even talked about, we've talked before, like the possibility of like Mike McDaniel being with him or something like that. But I will say, like, the Jets stuff, some of the stuff he did on the media front did to me seem like, dude, this guy can't handle this. I understand it's New York, and I understand that things, I'm sure, can get crazy. But, like, this whole trying to find out who's the source and everything, and it's like, you're just wasting your time on stuff that, like, you should not have time to devote energy to. So, I guess, first of all, how bad was that? Was that a red – is that a red flag that should still be kept in mind? Or was it that the environment was so rough that you have to give him a pass?
Are you talking about the mole hunt, or are you talking about
– the mole – everything. But, yeah, in general, yeah, the mole hunt. I mean, you know, like it didn't go well. There's a lot of reasons. What's that?
I said I'm never a fan of mole hunts, especially if I know people in the building.
Yeah, well, so, sure, of course not. But yeah, also, like, if a coach is doing that to me, like, dude, it's hard enough to stay employed in this league. You're worried about that crap? Like, coach your team.
Right.
Do your job.
Yeah, you don't want to deal with extraneous BS, right? You know, that doesn't really matter. If you win games, things, you know, tend to go their own way. And that's also been a leaky building forever. And, I mean, as long as the Jets have existed, I'll say this. It's like I liken the Jets to a team that has the worst offensive line in football, and you're trying to evaluate the offense, right? Like, and you just sit and you stare, and you're like, how do I even come to a real conclusion about what I'm looking at? Because it's so bad, and it's so destroyed by this one thing that every player on the field, it's almost impossible to know exactly what their real – ceiling performance could be if they weren't playing on a team that's poisoned. And I'm telling you, the Jets are. It's what that organization is. It's why, you know, the NFL right now is you know, going after the union because of the fact that they want these report cards to not exist anymore. The driving force behind that is Woody Johnson. And you know,
which is such a joke. Yeah,
it is. Yeah, it's absolutely a joke. And it's, and yet, you know, that just shows you, though, kind of the state of that owner and how much it infects everybody inside the organization. And I mean, from the front office to the coaching staff to players, people come out of there and they're like, it's a well and there's no bottom. And everybody points at Woody as being one of the significant, you know, issues there that impacts day-to-day operations, coaching decisions, the money, how the money flows, you know, the assessment of players, a million different things. And so I would just say with Saleh, everywhere he's ever been, aside from the Jets organization, I have heard nothing but good things. And, you know, even the criticisms that came out of the Jets, which were very much from the top. I mean, they were just the kind of criticisms that I'm not going to say exactly what they were in terms of the wording of it, because I don't want to get anybody fried and the organization still there. But they were so petty that it was just you just brushed them off. You're like, man, that's just you're just saying stuff at this point because you're angry and you're spiteful. Like, I'll give you an example of one. I know one of the things that Woody thought, he got sold a can of, you know, of BS with Saleh because he thought he was getting this fiery, emotional, you know, coach and this leader and like all these things. And Woody didn't think Saleh yelled at the officials enough. It really bothered him that he didn't go after officials to the level where he thought, you know, if there's a bad call, Saleh needs to be up in an official's face screaming, you know, challenging the officiating more than he did. So there's that. And then there's, you know, he didn't think he was a very good tactician in terms of how he called games, how he managed games, how, you know, how the defenses ultimately performed. You know, just off the top, that's like two things where he was just like, he's neither of these. I need a tactician who yells at officials. So what does he do?
Brilliant.
He goes and he hires Aaron Glenn, right? That's like, doesn't that kind of show you? Like, he proved it out in the ensuing hire, because Aaron Glenn is the very demonstrative guy on the sideline who yells at officials, and, you know, who people felt like he was, in spite of the injuries they was dealing with in Detroit, he was a very, very good tactician. I think, you know, to me, Saleh was that guy that when he got fired, I'm like, he's going to get another shot. I think a lot of people thought he was going to get another shot. I don't know that people thought he would go back to San Francisco and be able to perform at this level with the injuries that they have had. You know, I definitely think it spun up for him pretty quickly, being able to, you know, take advantage of this situation and impress a lot of people. I personally, my interactions with him, you know, do I think in terms of the superfluous stuff, the mole hunt and, you know, kind of the BS that comes along with it, I think some of that is New York. You know, I think sometimes you get lost in the maelstrom of BS that goes on, and you get, you know, you're constantly getting questioned about things, and it becomes an irritant. And then the next thing you know, you're doing things that might normally be out of character for you. I don't think focus is a problem for him. I don't think planning is a problem for him. I think if he's in a normal environment, that's not, you know, anything I would really worry about. So I think he's a quality candidate. I don't think he's the only quality candidate out there for Tennessee.
Is Kevin Stefanski going to wind up being a candidate? Should we spend time talking about him?
Cleveland Radio, are you listening? Charles.
No, have you not chimed in with Paul? Did you not prepare for this?
I didn't tell him, but I'm glad he asked you that question. Let's hear it.
Thanks, CK, because Cleveland Radio listens to this show every time I do it, because I won't go on Cleveland Radio, because every time I do, I get in trouble in the Browns organization about what I say.
Long pause.
Yeah, I mean, look, it obviously has not gone well there. Obviously, over the expanse of the season, I don't know that I've ever seen Kevin Stefanski look more challenged in terms of whether he was fulfilled doing his job, right? Whether, you know, like I question at times, you know, like, where is he at on this? Like, instead of saying, well, is management on board with him? Is the front office on board with him? You know, I sometimes look at Kevin and I'm like, how's he doing, man? Because his press conferences, he doesn't answer anything anymore. He seems to be miserable, which is understandable because you're going through a miserable season. If, you know, I got asked this by Joe earlier in the season, like, is Kevin definitely going to be there? And I think the first time we talked about it, I was like, no, yeah, I mean, you know, everybody's on the same page there. I don't know. I mean, I would assume, and again, this is me assuming, I'm not reporting this is going to happen, but given how everything has gone, given how I've kind of watched Kevin over the course of the season interact with the media and the answers he's had to, you know, constantly recycle over and over again about Shador, I'm sure there's going to be a conversation about, like, where are we at here? Like, you know, is this still working? Does Kevin want to be here? How does the offense look? Who's calling the plays by the time we get, you know, beyond week 18? It's just a lot of stuff now that you have to talk about with Cleveland that you didn't before. So my answer when we followed up on this was I'm less convinced that he's going to be the coach, you know, going into 2026, but that's only because of how everything has gone in totality in Cleveland. And I also say this knowing there's still some games here to be played. There's still information to be processed. I'm curious to see how this plays out, you know, with Shador. And, you know, interestingly enough, I mean, and this involves the Titans in a way, I don't hear great things about this, like the quarterback class that guys are so hopeful about when the season started in terms of, hey, if it doesn't work out for the Browns and this other multitude of teams that need quarterbacks, there might be six guys, there might be seven guys. Yeah, that has not panned out. And the guys that are expected to be at the top of this next draft, there's going to be some significant red flags that you're going to have to convince yourself about. Some of them like very experience related, some of them in terms of like skill and the tool set related. And this affects the Titans, obviously, because I think, you know, the Titans end up with the number one pick. Depending on how the defensive class looks at the top, I would think, look, you got to rebuild on your hands. It behooves you to maybe move back and accrue picks and, you know, try to have as large a class as possible, as many shots at finding starters and quality backups as possible. I don't know that there's going to be a gold rush, like a land rush to get the number one overall pick this year, maybe the way there was in years past. And, you know, I think even that's got to factor in for the Browns. You know, if we're drafting a quarterback, do we have the coach in place and are we happy with the play calling? And will that keep us with that, you know, Kevin, or do we part ways?
So how about Pittsburgh? Is this all media-driven? Is this all fan-driven? I don't imagine the Rooney family does a lot of talking about a potential coach change before the season is over, but could you see it happening, or is this just us?
The only they don't. That is not an ownership that says anything really about the head coach, the thought process of potentially changing coaches. And, you know, part of that is because they never have to do it. It's like every couple of decades, it's like, oh, we might have to change coaches here. And it's, you know, the last time around with Bill Cowher, it was not under circumstances like these. I will say this. The one thing that caught my eye, it was when Ben Roethlisberger brings up this idea of like Penn State, right? And the reason why that catches my eye is because ownership and Ben's still really close. You know, like he's very, very close to the family. He's remained extremely close. And so I'm like, okay, that like somebody talks, you know, to the family saying something like that is, like I said, it just, you have to raise an antenna and go, okay, well, here's someone who's very tight with the people who are, you know, would make this decision ultimately. And what Ben seemed to be saying, you know, to me was more of a, hey, you know, maybe it's like, this is a point where you just kind of, everybody kind of goes their way. Like, it's just not, it's not something that's working and it's not progressing anymore, you know, the way that ultimately people thought it would. There is grounds to me when you look overall at the organization, you know, there's grounds for massive change, sweeping change, you know, change beyond Mike Tomlin. Like if they want to be extremely critical of, you know, Omar Khan and some of the moves that he's made as a general manager, I mean, you do have the highest paid defense in football. It's not lived up to that. You did trade George Pickens, and everybody knew for the longest time you wanted to get George Pickens out the door. Now, not only is he a number one receiver, he's a number one receiver for the Cowboys, and I think he is their number one receiver over CeeDee Lamb. You've, you know, there's just, oh, you know, Caleb Johnson, you draft Caleb Johnson, and, you know, that's it, it's just he's not playing, and there's a multitude of moves that were made, and then on top of it, Rodgers, that have not really worked out. You know, you paid DK Metcalf. Now you have to ask, like, Arthur Smith, how's this offense functioning right now with the guys that are actually on the roster? Could we be getting more? It's, yeah, it's a lot. And now Aaron, on top of it, Aaron is being Aaron and starting to say things about teammates that are causing other questions to be asked. And, you know, he had the
who would have known? Who would have guessed?
Yeah. Well, no, but it's even kind of deepening now because it's like nobody noticed. I think Florio noticed where he said, you know, Rodgers got asked the follow-up question, I believe it was yesterday, by Brooke Pryor about what he had said about these, you know, having these meetings, going over film and, you know, guys running the right routes. And then he got asked this question yesterday, just sort of a follow-up on it, and he said something about not addressing the off-field stuff. And I saw Florio noticed it. I think a couple of people, I mean, I think it's like Pittsburgh Radio, there were some other people that noticed it, and they were kind of like, what? Like, what off-field stuff are you talking about? Like, we didn't know anything about some off-field stuff. Is there off-field stuff now going on with, you know, with the Steelers right now? So, yeah, it's gone about as poorly as it could. And I TK, I don't have any line to ownership. Like, straight up, I don't. Yeah. I know Ben's close to ownership. That, to me,
telling.
Is always sort of a one of those lights that goes off in my head when he says something that would be related to a big move that ownership makes. It feels to me like it felt when we got to the end with Andy Reid in Philly. That's how it feels to me, where you're just like, I know this guy's a good coach, but coaches will tell you your messages go stale at some point. Like, you sometimes change is what's needed
for both sides.
Yeah, for both sides. Yeah. You just need to refresh it.
Yeah, Titans will take Tomlin. They'll take Tomlin right now. I think. Gosh, I would hope so. My goodness. I don't want to keep going through all the possible Titans coaching candidates.
Yeah, that was a good three.
But I want to hit on something you mentioned there, Charles. And I also, by the way, I do not want to talk draft. We have a strong ban
policy
on draft talk until the end of the season. But it is the number one pick with the Titans, as you said. I totally agree. Like, if they get it and they really need to try to be able to move out of there, get more picks.
Right.
I mean, I, obviously, you know, if you think that Arvell Reese from Ohio State is going to be the next dominant player, well, you take him. But I mean, you'd love to have that option. You mentioned the quarterback draft, and obviously we all know so many of these guys, Nussmeier, Sellers, Klubnik, I mean, Aller. I mean, really, like, up and down the supposedly great class.
Those they're are always, all the guys that hit icebergs.
Yeah. Those are. So you said the quarterback at the top of the draft, red flags, because I do, like, I look at a guy like Mendoza, I kind of feel like he might be the top of the draft. Ty Simpson, I think, also has a shot. Are those the two guys you're thinking of, and what are the red flags if you've heard things that you could tell us?
Well, okay, Dante Moore and Ty Simpson.
Dante Moore, there you go.
They just don't have a big resume, right? Like, there's not this and that, to me, now it really scares me. I mean, it's not as bad as, like, Trey Lance, right? Where you're like, man, Trey Lance basically played one season of football, and that was it. And then you, like, go back to high school, and there was, like, you know, you had to go into his high school career. He wasn't playing football. And so it's not quite that bad. But the limited resume, you know, makes me think of, like, okay, J.J. McCarthy played a lot of years, but he didn't throw a lot of passes. Like, it's both from a time standpoint and then, like, a rep standpoint. Are these guys, you know, have they gone through enough seasons of – football to show you what adversity is going to look like, you know, when it hits them. So I think both Simpson and Dante Moore, to me, it's like, okay, some of that skill set you're going to have to figure out it on the NFL level. And that's hard. I don't know. It makes me skittish nowadays with the way that we see quarterbacks falling apart on the NFL level who just either don't have enough reps to show you, here's all the things I do and I can do it consistently, a.k.a. J.J. McCarthy, or, you know, here I've got, you know, basically one season under my belt And then when I get to the NFL level, I pee down my leg because I'm not used to what the speed and the windows look like. And it's all too fast for me. It takes time for me to figure it out. Mendoza's different, obviously. He has the resume. I think the thing that concerns me about Mendoza is when, like, I asked evaluators kind of help me understand what this guy looks like on the NFL level. Like, the comps you get are, well, like, okay, his ceiling is like, you want, okay, high comp is JJ or Jared Goff. And I'm like, okay, that's pretty good.
Yeah. Like, the difference is, you know, he runs better than a 6.3 40, but yeah, okay, that's
interesting. Right. Yeah. I mean, yeah, he's got the athleticism and mobility to when he has to access that. There's a little more there. Yeah, there's no doubt. I agree with that. But it's more, his game is very much predicated on not bringing a big, you know, big, huge arm to the table. He is the guy, they'll say, well, he layers the ball and, you know, his accuracy and the timing and the footwork. And it's like all these things. I'm like, okay, like, that all sounds good. Is it good enough to sit there and go, yeah, the Raiders won't screw him up. Oh, the Browns, this is the guy that the Browns will get right. You know, this is, and then on top of that, like, does he have the line wherever he goes? Like, those are all great things to access, but you can usually access them best when you're going into a place that knows how to put an offensive line together and actually protect you. I just don't get, you know, whether it's Goff or Kirk Cousins or, you know, these are the sort of comps that you get. I'm like, man, that just doesn't feel, that to me does not feel like the guy you rush to the top of the draft board to get. He might be the first pick overall by default, because you have a couple of teams that are up there and need to get a quarterback. And if that's Cleveland, obviously they have two first round picks. What's there is there. You can't wait another year to go to the 2027 class that might be better. But yeah, it's just not, there's things I think to be nervous about with this class. It's not like, like Caleb Williams. Yes. It's that class. There were things to be nervous about. I did not think there were as many. I was, and evaluators were split up, like Drake May. I did not think there were as many things to be concerned about with Drake May that other people seem to, you know, have problems with. He had resume, he had arm, he had, you know, he had athleticism. You know, Jaden Daniels, sure, he's thin, but he's certainly got a resume. He's got a skill set, brings a lot to the table. Penix had a long resume. Nick's had a long. You see what I'm saying? Like, you're. In past years, you were reaching for someone where you're like, okay, well, they got a lot of experience, so I kind of know what the warts are. Or, okay, it's mixed experience, but also high skill level, so I know what the trade-off is. With these guys, it's like, because of the lack of resume for a couple of them, I think it's a little steep in terms of the, you know, the gamble you may be taking. And I also wonder, our team's going to, you know, look around and go, hey, is there a backup somewhere that maybe, you know, could use a chance? Like Mac Jones, is Mac Jones, is he available from San Francisco? And is that like a low rent option that we could use for a year just to kind of see what this would look like for us? And maybe he's got some tread on the tires. And it teams are not, you know, it's not lost on teams that Tampa Bay got a guy off the scrap heap, that Indianapolis, however you feel about Daniel Jones now, I guess not as great as it was, but he got that guy off the scrap heap. There's obviously a number of teams that have done that. So I think there are more options available than there used to be.
Yep, no doubt about it. Charles Robinson, as always, joins us every Thursday. Great stuff. Thanks very much.
Appreciate you.
We'll talk to you next week, buddy.
Man, look at this. You're cutting it like short. Sure.
826.
Robbie in the chair, you takes it right to like 829. That's it.
Really?
Look at Joe
maybe I'm better at microphone one, you know? Whoa, getting this to the sponsor. I don't know. Maybe I think I get an edge on Robbie.
Robbie's on his deathbed and Joe's calling him out.
I hope he's not listening right
<It's>
now.
It's hurtful.
Hey, did PK do the rant? Who did the rant today? I'm curious what the rant
was. I ranted about Herb Street saying that people are not going to schedule games because Texas is crying about not being in the playoffs.
But I was prepared to rant about Olympic hockey ice size.
So we got a lot of we've had a lot of yelling at clouds today, as you might imagine.
Olympic hockey ice size.
Yeah, let's make it smaller. Stuff. Let's make it smaller. Give him less space.
We have lots of complaints. But not a complaint with Charles Robinson. There's a segue, huh? There we go.
Appreciate it. Thanks. Look forward to appearing on Cleveland Radio today.
Let's get that on awful announcing.
We're sending it to them right now.
Straight to awful announcing.
See you, Charles.
All right, guys. See you.
All right, we come back. We're going to react to that. And, you know, PK, speaking of yelling about things, he wants to yell about the number one pick, don't you? Yes, you do. You're going to. Robbie and Rex Show, 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in. I had to check with Ian. Like, I'm enjoying a little Edgar Winter Frankenstein, baby. You know what I was listening to on the way in here, PK?
Something bad.
Possibly the best bass line ever. Do you know what that would be? What would be your pick for the best bass line ever?
Off the top of my head, I'm stumped.
All right. Well, if anybody doesn't know the song Green Eyed Lady by Sugarloaf.
Sure. All right.
I mean, that's a great. You know this song, Ian?
Maybe I've heard it, but I can't think of it off the top of my head.
That's got to be
good candidate.
It's got to be the next intro for the last of the day. Check it out. When you listen to it, you'll know it. I think that might be the best bass line ever. For people who know it, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. It's just hard off the top of your head to come up with the best bass lines.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of
the best. I
don't
know if I've ever heard this song.
You've heard it, dude.
When I'm listening to it right now.
Seriously? You're such a...
Another One Bites the Dust.
That's a good one.
The Chain.
That's a good one. The Chain by Fleetwood Mac.
Yeah, Chain.
That's a good bass line.
I thought you were going to say something from the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Well, I was going to say, there's a ton of their songs that are, And actually, if you want to do, you talk a little Geddy Lee bass lines, but PK hates Rush, so I don't know. He's got some issues.
Rush is awful.
Oh, shut up.
I just don't like whiny voice.
Oh, just enough. Rush is awful. I mean, it's not as bad as Robbie's Beatles or Trash, but it's a pretty bad take.
That's ridiculous.
That's a bad take. Hey, real quick, Saturday's college football game of the week, number 2 Indiana, speaking of Fernando Mendoza, number 1 Ohio State in the Big Ten title game, 94.9 The Fan, 7 o'clock. Coverage presented by Circa Sportsbook Kentucky is also available on the Game Nashville app and thegamenashville.com. That one, to me, is going to go a long way to determining who wins the Heisman Trophy. And right now, I think Diego Pavia may be in pole position. We'll see. Vegas thinks so. We will see. A lot of voters out there, including me. And we're not supposed to say, we're not supposed to say what our vote is until, it's announced. I haven't voted yet, but right now, if I were voting today, it would be Diego Pavia. Pegged by Steely Dan. That's a great bass line.
Money by Pink Floyd.
Yep.
Roundabout by Yes.
There you go. I mean, there's a lot of good ones. No doubt about it. All right, so number one pick, PK. First of all, you heard Charles there, and I thought that was very interesting. It is amazing, what the quarterback class was supposed to be. At some point, I don't have it pulled up right now, but go back to, the mock draft going into the season, Brugler had. It was, Klubnik, Drew Aller, Lenora Sellers. Who did we talk about that I'm not mentioning? Garrett Nussmeier. All of them were supposed to be, top 10 picks. And that wasn't even – that was just assuming that Arch wasn't coming out, right? Arch was, of course, the number one pick this year, right? Of course he was.
Yes.
Clearly, just because it's Arch Manning. That was out of control, and frankly, I blame a lot of media for not using their heads a little bit better than that. But all of these players have had different levels of failure. Mendoza has risen. Ty Simpson has risen. So I know that's not what you want to talk about. You want to talk about winning versus number one pick. But that is a very important thing to keep an eye on if you're a Titans fan. I mean, look. It's not a bad thing at all if Fernando Mendoza goes on a playoff run and plays really well.
Be great.
It's not a bad thing at all if Ty Simpson and Alabama go on a playoff run and Ty Simpson plays really well. You want legit number one pick level quarterbacks that NFL executives and talk themselves into, yes, that's the guy. Now, I feel like every year someone by default is the guy, and I think maybe last year there was a little bit of that with the quarterback draft class. As we discussed ad nauseum going to the draft, but that's a really important thing to track if you're a Titans fan, is those guys, those two guys I'd say in particular. And Dante Moore is a good point too. Another one, guy who's going to be in the playoff, kind of late riser. I've been very impressed with him. He's a good player. So if those three guys do well in the postseason. You know, it's just like
who's the third? Mendoza,
Oregon. Simpson, and Moore. Yeah. I mean, it happens. I think it happens. It's happened a lot in basketball where someone kind of comes out of nowhere and, you know, takes a team on a Final Four run. Yeah. Shabazz Napier, LeBron James all of a sudden is like, I need him on my team.
Right.
And he wasn't on anyone's radar whatsoever, but he went nuts in a tournament for UConn. You know, I mean, stuff like that. But it's important. But what do you want to say about
that? Here's my question. This is what I'm struggling with. I've got a column almost complete, but I'd love your input. I'd love some text. I know that the vast, vast majority, you know, I don't run into anybody that really agrees with me. They want the Titans to preserve this number one pick. They think long-range health, having the number one pick, enables a trade that gets them the most picks, that gives them the best chance to supplement the roster, that helps them long-term. And I understand all of that, and all of that is true. But it bothers me that people don't feel any tension between that and waiting 32 weeks every year for the 18 weeks of NFL football and then sitting down for 3 hours and being completely comfortable with your team losing and watching Cam Ward struggle and deal with it and watching Jeffrey Simmons deal with it and DK and Helm, these young guys who clearly would get something good out of winning. I talked to Simmons about this yesterday, and he said, when we come back, and this is a little funny, he said, when we come back for OTAs, meaning when they come back for OTAs.
Yeah.
Because
I'll be watching.
Because I'm not going to be here. But when they come back for OTAs and we self-scout and ponder ourselves, we want to look at film of us meeting our standards in some ways to have set something for ourselves. And we can do some of that in these next 5 games. And we need that tape. If we don't have that tape to put up, we can't show ourselves what we're trying to do.
This sounds like a reach, man.
And there's value in that. I think there's value in these guys winning. I think if Cam Ward were to win 2 of the last 5 games, which I think is unlikely, by the way, I don't know that it's going to happen. But I don't believe it's going to happen. But I think there's great value for Cam Ward and some of these other guys to feel wins. And that there's long-term implications of that for him, too. And I think people are too easily dismissive of that in the name of the draft, the draft, the draft. And I know the football right now is miserable. But don't we wait 32 weeks every year to see the football? Don't we care about the football?
Yeah,
even if the football's miserable?
Yeah, but when it is, at some point when it's obviously miserable and the patient is terminal, I mean, you know, do you have to think about the greater good a little bit? I would think you would.
This thing, though, where people say, I'm watching the game and I want it to be competitive and I want Cam to have a last-minute drive.
But still lose.
But don't score.
Yeah.
You know, get down there and throw a good pass, but get to the one and then get stuffed.
Right.
There doesn't seem to be any tension or emotional conflict for people. And I just struggle with that. Now, my main sports are baseball and soccer. They don't have the draft implications and all of that. But I cannot get into the mindset of rooting for my team to lose. Am I just a complete anomaly at this?
No, I think that they're – first of all, I would argue that, like, if I'm a Titans fan, I want to see one for sure. I'd like to see one. I'd like to see at least for the rest of the way one time where, like, there's a and again, if ideally it's like, I mean, let's be real, it's not going to be a convincing win, right? So ideally it's like a Cam Ward drive like happened against Arizona. You get one more of those and get a win. And yes, I agree that there's some value in, like, these guys. Hey, we won together. This young crew move forward. But, like, also, when it comes down to it, if that doesn't happen, it's the difference between, like, 1-16 and 2-15, I mean, It's about, are they going to get players? Are they going to get a good coach? You know, like, either way, they're taking massive lumps this year. This is a get, learn from adversity, learn from failure, and try to take it forward. Like, is one or two wins, all of a sudden they're, now we know the, oh, we put it on tape. We know how to win. Oh, we're,
no,
yeah.
It's not dramatic.
But I agree with you to a point, like a win would be good. Also, I feel like the Seattle game is a good example of, okay, Cam played well. You saw progress. There was some fight. That's a really good team. You fought back. Okay, so you lost. Hey, you know, that number one pick is still – I mean, I think that's kind of the balance you strike, right? But I think when you're watching it, I think a lot of Titans fans would say that they still, like – it's your team. So at some point it's like, yeah, like screw the Jags or the Texans or the Colts, maybe even depending on who you're playing, right? Yeah, let's win this game. I think there's still a lot of people who feel that way.
I just don't get a lot of that vibe.
The text line is, here's a text. Is Paul serious? Value number one pick far outweighs meaningless wins in a lost season. Daniel says, we want competitive football and war to develop. Head coach so bad, he values points, not touchdowns. Yep.
I agree with that.
That's Mike McCoy. T from Clarksville says, Titans don't have to try to preserve their number one pick. We'll have it. Possibly the least competitive team in NFL history. We should absolutely try as hard as possible to win. I want nothing more than to win the remaining games. Just don't think it's possible. That's where you are.
Yeah. I'm surprised to hear somebody say that. But I look at some guys like Denard Wilson, who's screwed in this. But he's worked some magic, really. And I think he deserves a result.
Yeah. Yeah, I hear that. No, I understand. Another text says, how about Titans won that last game of 2023 and wound up with J.C. Latham instead of Joe Alt or Malik Neighbors? Yeah. I mean, look, again, I think it's very good for the Titans if they
He's
get the number one
pick. He's
also
had years, you know, where they had a good pick and they wound up with Corey Davis and Adore Jackson.
Right. Sure, of course. Look, I think the Titans are safe winning one more game and probably two more games. But winning one more game, I think they're very much safe to still get the number one pick.
Probably.
Now,
you don't want to be in a tie. I mean, if you're in a tie with a bunch of teams, you're picking last amongst those teams. Your strength of schedule is the hardest, which puts you at the back of any tie-breaking situation. That's another factor, I think, contributing to people. Like, if you're not first and you're tied with three teams, then you're fourth. You know, second, you could still probably do some damage trade-wise.
You're getting some support, Paul. Keegan says, I agree with you completely. Don't listen to these other fools. Craig says, Paul, think about if the radio station had a draft. You have one or two surprise shows. The next thing you know, you're hosting a show with Stilly because you had a horrible draft slot.
Stilly, by the way, isn't employed by the radio station.
Have you and Stilly done any shows lately?
If I had a
I want more Paul, Stilly, and Paulie.
If I had a draft at the radio station, I couldn't draft Stilly because he doesn't work here.
Yeah, but I mean, sometimes it's like the Oilers go get Warren Moon out of the CFL, Doug Flutie. It'd be like taking someone out of the CFL.
Yeah. Stilly and I did a couple shows for the 440 Network while
I want more.
Braden was in Spain, guys scheduling big vacations during football season.
How about that, Braden? Mr. Fancy Pants over there. So you've got some support for this. More that are like, dude, no, I want the number one pick. But, again, I think that you should root for the Titans to do well. And, you know, like, you shouldn't be heartbroken if it results in a win, right?
I also have a big problem with draft fascination. Like, people that are more interested in seeing a guy stand at a podium and say a name than the 18 weeks we wait 32 weeks for of games being played, even if they're bleep games.
Well, that's a...
Like, you wait all year for the games. These people who wait all year to see players' names read off a card is baffling to me. I like sports. What do you like?
Yeah, I don't disagree with you, but I do have an answer for that. We'll get to that in our last segment. Robbie and Rex are 102.5 The Game. I mean, that's a pretty good baseline, man. I mean, that's a pretty good baseline. I'm just saying. Sugarloaf, I mean, green-eyed lady.
Did this just pop on, like, the radio? Or were you like, hey, I'm in the mood for some green-eyed lady?
I always just do random iTunes. I just play my iTunes. It's one of my songs. I mean, I have, like, 10 million songs.
Yeah, right.
But, yeah. And I was like, oh,
that's
hell
funny
yes.
Funny to come across that.
Look, green-eyed lady. Let's go. I mean, the song itself is, like, 14 minutes long. So, you know, it's a little bit repetitive.
After this,
you
played Inagata DeVita.
There you go. There you go. Little Iron Butterfly. But no, I think that might be. We've had a lot of great nominees for the best baseline. You know, Green Day, Longview, different eras. Like you said, the Chain-Flavored Mac. Pegged by Steely Dan. Any Steely Dan reference I'm in favor of. So I like that one. We've got a lot of good possibilities.
I think we heard Reeling in the Years earlier in this show.
Is that right? You played a little Steely Dan earlier?
That might have been yesterday.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, crap. We almost have to end the show.
Yeah.
So,
this
listen.
Has gone very fast.
Well, yeah. So, to answer your question on, I don't disagree with you, but this is, I think this is where sports and life, it's like people always want to think about the next thing. What's next that's going to make things better? People want to have hope. How are things going to get better? I agree. Like, in particular, I think in football, the NFL draft, and also recruiting. Now, recruiting is a little different now because things are, with people are ripping each other's players off other teams and stuff. But it's its own industry. The draft is its own complete industry. The football recruiting is its own. I mean, it's incredible.
But people were all about the draft last year. And if that number one pick went out this Sunday and played a terrific game, that's a good development about the draft. Just not the next draft, the last draft.
Very good point. Paul, a lot of good yelling today. Thank you for participating. Thanks for coming in. Robbie, hope you get better.
Robbie, get well. Don't block the box. Be sure to lock your locks.
Next man up, Jake Lyman coming up, 102.5 of the game.
Say it.